It is Friday, October 5th, 2018, the day that Mitch McConnell wants to plow through Kavanaugh's nomination. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week, I talk to our Capitol muckraker-in-chief, Sean Kitching, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. On this week's show, yes, Mitch McConnell remains committed to plowing through the confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court. The Senate will be vote on cloture today with a confirmation vote as soon as Saturday evening. We'll get into that a little bit. We just heard right before we went on air, Susan Collins is voting to confirm. You know, moderate Susan Collins is going to do the right thing. Not. Melania Trump was welcomed to Malawi by protests. One sign read, "Not a shithole." Kavanaugh polling shows why the yoga vote is just a bunch of nonsense, and that's putting it politely. 83% black and 66% of Latino voters support Dr. Ford, while 40% of white voters believe Dr. Ford. Go figure that out. Got the numbers? Got the calculator? Got that one? Hundreds protest yesterday in cancel Kavanaugh protests in D.C. and around the country. Hundreds were arrested, including Amy Schumer, who made it all over the news, right? Good for her. And it looks like the 2020 presidential election is getting warmed up. Elizabeth Warren makes some loud noises about running this week. Big news, Amazon raises the minimum wage to $15 an hour. Way to go, fight for 15. But hold off on the celebrations for Bezos, the benevolent billionaire. Workers lose benefits, bonuses, stock options as part of the deal. And Interpol's president is reported missing in China. You know, Interpol, International Police Organization, lost their president. Oh my God, the world we live in. Today's Pennsylvania, folks, the one and only debate for the Pennsylvania gubernatorial for Pennsylvania gubernatorial race was this past Monday, and Alex Trebek stole the show. He stole the show and he did something with it, man. That was holy. Trebek spoke for about 44 minutes total, while Wagner and Wolf spoke for 29 and 23 minutes. Right. And Trebek, you know, decided to also kind of, you know, weigh in and defend the Catholic Church while he's at it. I mean, holy crap. Scott Wagner paid Fox News host Judge Jeanine Pirro $25,000 to speak at an upcoming fundraiser. Pirro has used her roles with Fox News to spread conspiracy theories about Dr. Ford and called Dr. Ford a fraud. That woman's just horrid. She's horrid. Wagner, you know, while he was out and about on the campaign trail, stopped by a farm, and a duck, or maybe it was a goose, shit on him. And his campaign posts the pic. Once again. New internal poll shows that Emily Skupoff was within 5 points of House Speaker Mike Terzai. Unreal. Montgomery County Republican Tom Mert helped get a killer cop a patronage job at the Philadelphia Parking Authority. This cop was charged with murder after shooting a fleeing suspect in the back. And a major blow to our First Amendment whistleblower rights this week as the U.S. Supreme Court refuses to hear Carlene Bradley's case. Consequences will be felt, especially if Kavanaugh's on the court. Elections have consequences. Say it with me. And today's last call, concerns that U.S. military project to deploy insect allies, I kid you not, using insects to genetically engineer crops on actually existing crops out in the field, the concern is that it could be repurposed as a biological weapon. Insert dystopic science fiction music here. But it's actually happening. And we talked about this a little bit last week. The asteroid landing by a Japanese lander was successful, but the mascot rovers are no more. Free Will Brewing has got a couple of cool releases this week. Yesterday, Free Will released the all VIP New England style IPA and did it as part of a screening of a new documentary on PA craft brewing called Poured in PA. I wish I could have been there last night to see it, but I didn't. So hopefully we'll report on that in the weeks ahead. And today, Free Will is releasing, I'm not today, actually, I think it's tomorrow, on Saturday, they're releasing a pawpaw saison. That sounds really interesting. And as part of that, I learned that the pawpaw is actually the only fruit indigenous to PA. Who knew? Take that, Johnny Appleseed. I'd want you to tune into the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org, or you can tune in on the Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. I want to thank, as usual, all the continued support of our members. You know, without you, we could not be doing what we're doing. And if we want a progressive future, we need a progressive media. With the 2018 midterm elections right around the corner, literally less than a month now, we need, or just about a month, I guess, almost exactly a month. We need you. We need you to help keep the movement in the media and the movement in the media. And the best way you can do that is simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose a membership level. You can join as little as $5 a month. $5 a month, folks. And if you don't want to join as a member, not quite yet, don't worry. You can just go to ragingchickenpress.org and click on the big blue donate button and give us what you will. Right, but really, seriously, for all our members, our all longstanding members who have been with us from the beginning, and those who've just joined the past couple weeks, thank you, thank you, thank you for your support. So, man, Sean, I don't even know like what I'm even feeling about this stuff now, because it's just like this week has just been. I feel like I'm on the verge of like just complete cynicism and complete rage. I mean, it's just. It's incredible.
Yeah, well, at least the elections are right around the corner.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, it's like they need to be because we need something, man. We need something.
Like one of the things that really was interesting, you know, like with the Kavanaugh stuff, was looking at some of the polling that came out this week.
Yeah,
we were talking this beforehand, but like, what I guess is your make of the enthusiasm gaps that Republicans have been closing in on? And because people think like, that's it, the blue wave is crashing right now.
No, it's like, okay, you know, you and I were going through some of the numbers in particular. And if you actually look at, if you look at a bunch of the polls, and if you go to like 538 and check some of this out, you see like the numbers of support, right, for Kavanaugh and for Trump and things like this, but Kavanaugh in particular, it hasn't moved, right? I mean, the enthusiasm thing is like, look, I mean, I'm concerned about that, right? I'm concerned about it in the sense that, you know, look, right-wing Republicans, right, and the core base of the Republican Party is they have major, like, investments in the Supreme Court because they understand the connection between the Supreme Court and things like Roe v. Wade, right, and kind of the freedom of religion and all that other kind of stuff that they're always arguing for. And so they're generally more active when there's kind of issues the Supreme Court or the front. And there, you know, polls were showing, or at least, yeah, the polls were showing that, you know, Republicans weren't all that enthusiastic about the midterm elections this year in comparison with Democrats. And so this will rile up, you know, some of the base. The question is how much of that base that wasn't already going to go to the vote is actually going to vote. And on the other side of it, I mean, you know, we got to talk about the potential, you know, the real possibility of an undercount of possible Democratic voters. And I was using the example when we were talking about this before, is that, you know, there's folks registering students on college campuses, and there's like teams of people going around at Kutztown University, where I teach, right? And earlier this week, they had already signed up 600 voters, right? 600 students already. Right. And that's not including students who have already been enrolled or people are already registered to vote, or students who are registering to vote on other platforms. This is one team. Right. So I think that is going to have a significant impact across the country. Right. And, you know, we'll see. I think the media likes to latch on to this enthusiasm thing because it allows them to get back into like horse race mentality.
Yeah, and it's also like I look at the enthusiasm poll as like a pulse of where the base is at the current moment.
Yeah.
Like if Kavanaugh goes through, I think their base probably settles down. Like, okay, we got Kavanaugh through and that's it.
I agree.
Like we got what we wanted. Where it's like, I don't see this driving down the Democratic vote. on election
day? I don't know. If anything, look, like, see, this is the thing. It's like, you see these, you see especially some Democrats that are getting concerned about this, or you see this in the kind of like the liberal media, not the left media, but the liberal media, when they start kind of raising these concerns. Oh, does this mean that the blue wave is in crisis? It shows you just the lack of attention that, say, the official Democratic Party and the kind of like the liberal media, the lack of attention it pays to the base of the Democratic Party, right, and the left base, especially the emergent base that we've seen kind of over the past several, like, few years now. Right. So they don't pay attention to that. So they automatically assume that everything that is in play for an election is happening on the Republican side of things. Right. So it's like, you know, you're kind of at the whim of the Republican Party. The only way that you can win as a Democrat is if the Republicans don't turn out to vote, as opposed to the model that we've seen, you know, all the victories that have happened from the progressive angle of things. It's been like, that's not the model that people are operating on the ground. And so there's a disconnect, I think, in terms of the way that we're talking about what's happening in politics and what's actually happening on the ground. And, you know, I do think that you know, we have to bring Michelle Wolf back into this, because we have to remember the Democrats have a history here.
People think you might flip the House and Senate this November, but you guys always find a way to mess it up. You're somehow going to lose by 12 points to a guy named Jeff Pedophile Nazi Doctor. Oh, he's a doctor.
Right? And that's a concern. That's where, like, Michelle Wolf was so pointed when she was talking about the White House, when she gave that talk at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. So, you know, I look at it like that. I mean, I will not say that I have a good handle on what the reality is across the country. And, you know, you and I were talking about this too as well. This national kind of like test the waters polls is not really what's going to matter. It's going to matter what's happening in these key districts.
Yeah. And one of the things I thought that was really good, that The Root broke down the numbers of, like, who exactly is supporting Kavanaugh. And once again, this shows you that, like, that yoga vote for the Democratic Party is a bunch of nonsense. It's bullshit. You know, we've been saying this for a while. Like, the vote that the Democrats should be focusing on is the New American Majority model, which consists of people of color, single mothers, and millennials.
Yes.
And young Americans. That makes up the New American Majority, for, like, it's called a majority for a reason, of voters that are out there. And you look at it, you know, 83% of black and 66% of Latino voters support Dr. Ford.
Yes.
Well, 40% of white voters support her or believe her allegations.
Exactly.
And it shows you that, again, like, white women and white Republican women break down along the same lines. I mean, you look at it, it wasn't like white women that got Doug Jones elected to the Senate. You know, it was black and Latino voters who got Doug Jones elected to the Senate.
Yep. Yep. No, absolutely. And you look at the, you know, and if we were talking about this too as well, ahead of today's show, that what you do see is that you see hardening of, you know, the, you know, team sports kind of approach to politics, that people, you know, Republicans are, you know, that's the best predictor about whether or not they support Kavanaugh. Are they a Republican? And then, you know, the concentration of the Republican Party, right, and its core base are kind of these white men. Right. But even if you look at and this is why I say that that's important to consider, because if you even look at kind of white women, right, white women have not been, you know, white women Republicans have not been significantly impacted by what's happened over with the Kavanaugh hearing at all. Right. I mean, the numbers are pretty constant. So, you know, there you go again. And this is, just to reiterate or kind of reinforce what you're saying, is that, you know, the whole idea that there's this group of kind of moderates that are there that we can peel off and win by, that's such a bankrupt model at this point. About what's a path to win. And, you know, again, it baffles me about, you know, when discussions start to move in that direction, because if you just look at facts on the ground, the campaigns that are winning in places like in Pennsylvania, for example, they thought the progressives could never win and they could never oust Republicans. They seem to be winning. Right.
Yeah.
And this is what, you know, I was talking to some folks who are doing voter registration on our campus, on Kutztown's campus this week. And I kept on saying is like, you know, part of their pitch is about kind of, you know, national politics and the senatorial race. And I'm like, man, you see, you know, I said, I get it. Right. But you got to put the emphasis back on the local stuff. Right. And then kind of start building that education. Yes, it might not motivate everybody. Right. You know, because they don't know about the local stuff. I said, but you got to start building that or making that argument now towards looking forward, because, man, you get students turning out, or you get kind of like the kind of newer voters, younger voters turning out in some of these key places like the Lehigh Valley, for example. Not only are you going to see kind of like, you know, Democratic victories, you're going to see Democratic landslides, and it's going to change the culture of politics in PA.
Yeah, I know. I know, like, one of the things that's happening right now, especially, is like talking about the colleges that are getting organized in Pennsylvania. You know, Democrats and other organizations are also heavily investing in colleges like Penn State. Swarthmore out in the Philadelphia suburbs just got its polls back at its own campus.
Yep.
And stuff like that. I mean, like, that's the type of stuff that's important.
It is important.
It's also important why you should vote in odd year elections. Because that's when a lot of the county chairs and county commissioner seats are up too.
Yeah. And it's a lot of all the more reason. And I think that, you know, voting on your campus too as well, and registering on your campus, that becomes that much more important. Especially, you know, look, you know, like it or not, it's like, you know, college campuses has a disproportional impact on the economy of communities. Right. And they also have a lot of people that are kind of like moving in and out of these districts. Right. But students are there who are there for 4 years and things like this could have, if they were voting in significant numbers, could have a significant impact on the representation in those areas. And if you look at Pashi schools, right, this is why, again, everybody likes to look at the ones, you know, the schools that have the big, you know, the big football teams and things like this. But if you look at the network of colleges and universities like in the state, right, and this is true in other states in different ways, but those places that you need to have kind of organized students and organized young people are the places where the Pashi schools are. Right. They're in these kind of red areas, in these underrepresented areas, underserved areas of the state, which, again, you know, this is, again, where Fetterman's work is so important to kind of go around the state and do this. And I know I'm kind of getting bleeding into Pennsylvania politics at this point, but I think that this is that's the way I think we're going to have to pay attention to these races, is not just on, you know, what's the national feel. Right. But rather, you know, what's the hard work that's happening on the ground across the country?
Yeah.
So, and I think, you know, it's going to be an interesting test case to see what happens in North Dakota. Right. Because you have Heidi Heitkamp was like trailing by something like 7 points, I think, in the last poll that I saw. And so that could be a Democratic loss of a seat up there. Right. But that's, again, on current polling. And, you know, the big question I would have, and I was looking for this yesterday to see if there's any polling or discussion of like, well, what's the organizing looking like on the ground? Like, what kind of new voter registrations are we seeing or so on? Because that could have a significant impact and, you know, end up being a surprise.
And one of the other things that, like, I've been pondering about this, that's like, especially this whole Kavanaugh stuff, like they want a win, the Republican side, just for the sake of getting a win.
Right.
And that's how, like, they're looking at this as through, like, win-loss, zero-sum. Like, who cares that he's, like, a rabid conservative? Like, for them, yeah, we can, like, all the older people, like, yeah, we'll fuck over our kids and the younger generations simply for a win.
Right.
And it's like this hedonistic base, like, mentality. Like they're it's like their beliefs, the Republican Party, are the most base beliefs in society.
Right. But
misogyny, greed, hatred, like, you know, like discrimination and stuff like that. Like, that's where the Republican Party is going, and that's where their base beliefs are at.
Right. And I think this is kind of a minor issue, but I mean, I think that the whole idea that they're really to screw over future generations for the, I don't like, they don't even think about it in those terms. I think what they think about is like, they are looking to secure the power structure as it is at all, with all possible means. And they will do it so that they protect their own. I mean, Kavanaugh, if anything, like, Kavanaugh stands out as the like shining example, right, of the white male power structure, the most privileged among us, right, that is getting a pass, right, and getting supported and people rallying to his cause when he is a freaking idiot to begin with. I mean, you hear this guy, he can't even control his damn emotions. He was one of the most banal, like, versions of a frat boy that I saw, like, when I was at Syracuse. Like, the worst kind of most average, everyday, drunkard frat boy. And that's who we're promoting. And because he is part of that power structure, they will defend him at all costs.
Yeah. And it amazes me how it's like, yeah, it's amazing because it's like it's also like to me it's almost like the failures of the messaging from the Democratic Party, where like they've allowed the right to co-opt morals and religion for decades now.
Yeah.
And like this is where like this defense of Kavanaugh and what he has done is also not it's rooted in the white male privilege politics and toxic masculinity, but this is also like rooted in years of evangelical Christianity and Baptist religious beliefs, having a structure on our politics.
Yeah.
I mean, like those two go hand in hand.
Yep.
And it's like the left has allowed the right to co-opt more what they deem as morality.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
It's like, yes, I'm speaking of this from someone who is an atheist, like, but it's also like we've allowed them to co-opt this point, like religion and morality, to the point where we're getting some of the most immoral people on the court strictly to defend misogyny and privilege.
Right. But I think, you know, to your point, and we've talked about Lakoff's kind of approach, like to, you know, framing and things like this and why this is the case. But like, and you know, again, I think that because so much of the left and the Democratic Party has bought into and refuses to let go of the kind of like the Enlightenment myth, right? That, you know, kind of like you speak facts and the facts will speak for themselves and then people will eventually come to the conclusion, when that's not what moves people. And also the poverty of that is that it doesn't allow for that constant evolution of talking about what our values are. Because, you know, and again, this is one of the problems that I saw, and this is kind of like a tertiary or problem, like of what happened with the hearings, is, you know, the Democrats basically choosing to kind of make everything about process and procedure, like the focus on kind of the FBI investigations and all that. There was no space very little space where during the hearing, when people were actually watching. Right. During the hearing, there wasn't a lot of space where they were kind of taken up to talk about what the values are, right? About what the moral argument is, what the ethical argument is, right? I think that they were assuming a lot of that. And again, there's good reason to assume that. But the thing is that you want to kind of constantly reinforce this stuff and remind people about why this is so freaking fucked up.
He's an accused rapist. Like, it's.
I mean.
But also you look at, I mean, more blending to the local part of politics, you know, it's like, it's, yeah. I mean, like, look at what the Republicans are doing. Nick Micarelli there, they allowed him to get his 10 years in. He'll be retiring in a few months or in a month or so. And then he'll get benefits for life.
Yep.
When he's accused of raping a consultant and has a PFA against him from a caucus member.
Yep. There you go. Right. It's like, there you go. Perfect. Right. Yeah, we're going to protect the old boys. We got to get them through. Yeah, they had a rough ride of it, you know, and they did some things they shouldn't. But, you know, he's one of us. So we're going to protect him and keep him in there. You know, we don't want to kind of like, you know, rush him out too quickly.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, it's the same. It's the same deal. I mean, like, you know, people are starting to say this now, too, as well. And I think, you know, despite, you know, this has nothing to do with what the Democrats did. It had to do with what was some, a lot of people's responses were when they saw the behavior of Brett Kavanaugh. Right. I mean, what his behavior in his hearing more than anything else, I think kind of tipped a lot of people kind of being like, this guy is nothing but a privileged little like a privileged white guy. Right. Who thinks he's entitled to the handouts that he's been given his entire life. Right. Because he's had the best of the best. And this was like somehow the Supreme Court is his and he's being robbed of what's necessary. His like his whole idea. You're never going to defeat me. I'll never quit. This is wrong. I worked hard. Yeah. You know what? Sorry, buddy.
Up yours.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But no, like this also reminds me of like living out here in Harrisburg. What the West Shore mentality is like this, like where Brett Kavanaugh grew up is exactly where, like, what the West Shore is out here in Harrisburg, is where all the rich consultants and people who make sure government runs on a day-to-day basis live. You know, it's a couple state senators live out there and everything, you know, all the, it's where they, it's where the country clubs are at. It's that secluded,
yep.
Like it's secluded from everything else. It's called the White Shore for a reason.
Yep.
And it's where the most privileged people in the region go. It's like they built their own Catholic school simply so like their children didn't have to cross the river and go to the Catholic school where the black kids are at. And this is like the same gated community that Kavanaugh grew up in. It just, yeah, it's sickening.
Yep. Yep. Oh, this is a, this is not directly related, but it seems to intersect with this. Katie Sipp just posted this up right here. This is on Twitter too as well, and says, this is reminds us working class Americans. This is from an article that just appeared in The Guardian. Working class Americans make up about half of the country, but they have never held more than 2% of the seats in any Congress since the nation was founded. Right. And we are seeing the extreme version of that dynamic right now.
Yeah.
Crazy. Well, you know, one thing that's good that I'm kind of happy that that has happened is that, you know, the protests haven't stopped. And this week, once again, I mean, you had kind of masses of people turn out. I mean, I thought it was amazing to see that there were busloads of people that were coming in from Maine to lobby Susan Collins. And I hope that all those people that were on those buses to come lobby Susan Collins are going to remember this on Election Day and are going to remember in her offices that she.
And they're going to remember it when she's up for re-election in 2020.
Exactly.
And they find someone to run for that Senate seat.
Exactly. That Susan Collins is right now is now part of the problem and part of the agenda to get rid of Roe v. Wade. Just, she can call herself a pro-choice Republican all she wants. But she's basically by saying today that she's going to vote yes, has kind of thrown in her lot. And yes, and people want to freaking split hairs. No, she's just voting to advance his nomination. You know, I'll believe it when I see it. Right. We've talked about her before and she plays this game all the time. Wants to seem moderate, but then all kind of come falls in line with the rest of the Republicans. So, yeah. So we have that. And there was also folks all kind of like people coming in by the hundreds from Alaska. All the way from Alaska to protest and to get into Murkowski's office to kind of like kind of pressure her to vote no. You know, I can't help but think that one of the that part of the dynamic or part of the calculus that they're doing in the Republican Party right now about why Susan Collins came out as a yes vote right now was to allow Murkowski to say no, but signaling to the rest of the Republican Party that don't worry, the vote's still going to be safe. Because I don't see Jeff Flake actually kind of
flaking.
He's gonna flake. I mean, you know, he's gonna flake, and he's gonna.
It's in his name.
Yeah, but he's gonna give that like that pouty look on his face, like he's really considering something, and it's making you feel like it's a really hard decision. And then he's gonna vote with the rest of the Republican Party, and then they'll probably let Murkowski go, so that she's not gonna lose her next election by selling out the indigenous peoples in there, which Kavanaugh will do. That's my guess. So hundreds of people that were out there and I think 300 plus people. No, it was more than that, I think, that were arrested both in the Senate office buildings and really across the country. People coming out and saying, no, we have not gone away and things are going to ramp up even more. I mean, what I can't help but think of, Sean, is like if Kavanaugh goes through, which seems like, I don't know, unless something happens that I'm not seeing on the radar right now, he's going to go through. And the legitimacy of the Supreme Court is a joke at that point.
But the Supreme Court's never been legitimate.
No, but the impression of it is a legitimate thing. Look, what happened?
It handed George W. Bush the election.
It did. Well, no, but that was the first major, like in my lifetime at least, right? That was the first major moment when people start, holy crap, what's happening here to the Supreme Court, right? Because I'm telling you, it's like when I grew up, right, and the education that everyone in my generation came up with is like, and I'm sure to a large degree your generation, is that the Supreme Court was a good thing, right? It was the one that gave us, you know, that Roe v. Wade, right? It's the one that protected that. It's the one that kind of, like, you know, did the right thing on civil rights and did all this stuff. And there's this history of the court being a kind of, like, supporting these progressive causes. But as Ian Millhiser reminds us, that that is a blip in the history of the Supreme Court. For the most part, the Supreme Court has been doing, like, historically what it's starting to do again right now. And this right here,
Lochner and
right. What was different about the Bush v. Gore, right? And this is that it wasn't about people were not paying attention to the, especially on the left, were not paying attention to the process that got us there. Right now, what's exposed is that the Republican Party will do anything to make sure that its agenda is going to rule the court, even when it means denying. Right. Sexual assault. Right. As a kind of like, you know, as a factor that should kind of like
disqualify
that
person.
Right. Exactly. And that's what's exposed. And that's the difference. And so you show me what I mean, anything that comes before the Supreme Court, I can't see how it has how anybody's going to expect it to be anything but something partisan. And it's going to go two directions. One, it's going to fuel anger and one, it's going to fuel despair. Right. And our job is to kind of try to get there from despair into action. And that's all I could think about.
Yeah.
But cool. And then, you know, one thing I have to say, you know, so we get Elizabeth Warren. Did you see Elizabeth Warren's little talk this week?
I did not.
Well, I have to say this. If she continues this, she basically said that, you know, after all these displays last week at the hearings and everything, she basically came out to a crowd and basically said, look, after this is all done and after the midterms, I'm going to give a hard look at running for president. And the thing that she did, right, which is why, you know, again, this is what I think people need to hear, right? Especially, you know, again, so much commentary, especially among feminists and women, were saying that if I, as a woman, were to behave the way that Brett Kavanaugh did at a hearing like that, like, I'd be done. Completely done. Right? Like, and what Warren did is she acknowledged that, but then she said, but I am angry and I will continue to be angry. I'm going to use that anger to take this back. Right. The fact that she kind of demonstrated and embodied that whole kind of counter kind of resist or that, you know, that whole kind of resistance to the kind of subjugation of women, the resistance to the playing nice. And we're just kind of like we're going to, you know, make sure the institutions are working all nice and fine. No, she's going to go and fight. And that's what needs to be at the front. And again, we can talk all the specifics in the world that you want about, you know, the problems or the limitations of Elizabeth Warren and kind of where she is in terms of progressive politics. Right. And I'm willing to talk about that stuff. But I think that what Elizabeth Warren the marker that she kind of like plunked down is a really good one. Right. And for the rest of the party. And I think that's going to have a huge influence on the whole tenor of the kind of Democratic Party primaries and the race on that side. So to see that she's actually saying, no, we're going to start this process right now. As soon as the midterms get over, I think that's going to be a very positive thing for the left.
I know. I think, in my opinion, I think she's one of the only people out there that could beat Trump in a general.
Yeah, that's probably
good. People want to see. I don't have faith in Kamala Harris.
I don't know. She's. I think if there's going to be if you want to talk about just like
I think one in, I don't know. Okay, if I have like one and two, it would be Warren, Sanders, Harris, probably in that order.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not faithful in many other people running for office in 2020.
No, I think the difference about Harris. Right. The difference about Harris, though, I think she's a little bit more of a wild card in that. Just I'm talking purely pragmatics at this point, like about whether or not she could win the election. Right. I think that she is. I mean, she's got a toughness to her. Right. She's not the kind of the rally of the crowds as much. Right. She's got this kind of toughness to her, which could play well against Trump, because unlike what happened in the last election, like where
I don't think Warren or Harris were put up with Trump walking over
exactly
her Clinton's back like that.
Exactly. Like, and imagine that spectacle, right, of Kamala Harris, instead of kind of like, you know, standing there and kind of like letting Trump loom, turn around and confronting and pointing in his face. Right. I could see her doing that.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's the kind of that's a significant difference. Right. And frankly, I think that she'd scare the shit out of him, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I mean, this is good news moving forward. In other good news this week, Amazon, you know, the benevolent billionaire Bezos, raised the minimum wage of Amazon workers, not the contract workers, but about, what is it, 250,000, you know, it's a pretty significant number of people to $15 an hour. Right. So that was pretty big news, kind of out and about in the world of work.
So is this like from like the Bezos Act?
Yeah, it wasn't the No Bezos Act, right? Wasn't that awesome?
I mean,
Bernie
said, I mean, like, yeah. people are saying, like, I think he did this simply because of Sanders publicly shaming Bezos into doing this.
Well, it's not just that, right? Is that you had Amazon went and bought out Whole Foods, right? And Whole Foods workers have been active in kind of organizing and kind of moving.
But like the Fight 15 movement.
Exactly. So, I mean, you have all that as part of the context. The fact that Sanders kind of like, you know, it fully embraced that movement and made that part of his campaign and that he went public and kind of lent his voice to this kind of stuff. Absolutely, absolutely played it out. The fact that he named it the No Bezos Act, right? I mean, like going after Amazon. Because look, I mean, I think Bezos and, you know, it's not just him. It's like all these billionaires that are kind of running all this stuff. They're recognizing like, look, you know, people are starting to realize that, you know, the pitchforks that are in their garage are good for more than just digging up some sod. Right. And that they're worried that they're coming for them. Right. And how, I mean, especially when Amazon kind of announces profits of like, you know, like, I don't know, so $1 trillion, right. They passed the $1 trillion mark and Bezos becomes this like huge, like, you know, the most obviously wealthy person in the world. It gets hard to justify, you know, to keep workers kind of in poverty wages. So, and this is, you know, frankly, this is no skin off their back, especially once you find out, because then, you know, they make this big announcement, it's a big PR blitz, but then it turns out that what they're doing is they're giving the $15 minimum raise, but then they're stripping away benefits, stock options, and bonuses. Right. And Bezos and his people claim that, OK, yeah, this is going to, you know, the raise of the wage is going to more than offset the benefits. But it's like, no, that's not the point. The point is if you're going to give the raise, you give the raise, but you keep everything else as it is. But that's not what they're doing.
Yeah. So does Walmart, they haven't gone to 15 an hour yet, right?
They're on their way.
OK.
Right. So they basically they did that bump up to, I think, $9 or $10, and they were on their way to 12, I think. And I think that 15 is on the horizon. Same with Target. Target says by 2020, I want to say, that they're going to be up to $15.
Which is pretty much only a year away from now.
Right, exactly.
I mean, it's going to force... Yeah. And I will say this, $15 an hour is still not a living wage.
No. Well, no. Like, $15 an hour puts you basically like just above the poverty level. Right? I mean, that's what we're talking about. Right, so $15 an hour, you know, is not like good living. $15 an hour should be the baseline, which we can start about using that as a kind of a UBI, right? If you want to put it in those terms.
Yeah.
Well, crazy. Well, yeah. So there's that. Well, we're gonna be watching that. It's gonna be really interesting because, you know, as you know, in this area where we're at, right between where I live and Kutztown, right, there's a huge Amazon warehouse, and Amazon has been kind of making all sorts of noise about kind of setting up shop and expanding its presence here in Pennsylvania. I know Pittsburgh made it as one of the finalists for like the Amazon 2, like the HQ2 or something like that. So
their gentrification plan.
Yeah, totally. I mean, yeah, it's totally what it is. And like everyone's like, oh, look, it's lots of water that we could live next to and stuff. So maybe this would be cool. Right. But that, you know, and Pittsburgh has put on a really strong, strong push to try to get Amazon to come there. So it's going to have presence in our state. And, you know, again, you're talking about hundreds of employees, right, that just got a kick up. You got Whole Food Markets, which are expanding in the state and across the country. They got a kick up. But, you know, it's interesting talking. I had a student who worked at Whole Foods, and she was talking about, yeah, I'm getting this raise. You know, I think she and all of her colleagues didn't have the wool pulled over their eyes when they got that, right? They fully recognized still, like, oh, so you're going to throw me some pocket change that you happen to – that you didn't really need right now? Yeah, okay, that doesn't really change a whole lot. So that's good. But one piece of just news that we just saw right before we went on air today is that I saw the Interpol's president is missing. And this is not funny. I don't know why this is striking me so funny today, but there's the guy, he's Meng Huang Hongwei, I think is how you say it, Hongwei. Meng Hongwei, he is the president of Interpol, which is kind of like the international police. He was stationed, based in France, and went back home to visit to people in China, visit relatives in China, and hasn't been heard from for like a week. And Interpol can't find them. Right? It's like their own police. I have no idea what's going on there. So, there are some reports, anecdotes that when he landed in China, he was apprehended by Chinese police and taken into custody and kind of immediately whisked away. We don't know. But it just struck me as just like another kind of, I don't know, peg in the bizarro world picture that the head of the international police stuff has gone missing. So here's our world, folks. Crazy. Oh, man, anything else for the good of the national order, Sean? Anything else to help us save the world?
No, that's it.
That's it. All right. Well, I'll tell you what. We're going to be right back. And when we come back, we're going to get into our Pennsylvania focus. But I want to remind everybody, if you like what you hear here, if you like what you read on Raging Chicken Press, please consider becoming a member by going to patreon.com/rcpress. You can become a member for as little as $5 a month. We need your support. We need to make sure that we got progressive voices here in the state of Pennsylvania and really across the country. Show your support to people like Sean Kitchen, who is like the muckraker of all muckrakers, the guy who basically breaks every freaking story that the politicos inside the Beltway of Harrisburg do not want broken. That's been made possible in part because of members like you. So thank you. So we'll be back right after this with our Pennsylvania focus. Talk to you soon.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1945. That was a day known in Hollywood as Black Friday. After World War II, the movie industry began to rake in profits. But they did not pass those profits along to their employees. 10,000 members of the Conference of Studio Unions were on strike. They were part of the Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners. They were also in a jurisdictional battle with the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees, or IATSE, over who should represent stage decorators. The strike wore on for half a year. The studios had more than 100 films backlogged and were able to wait out the strikers. But as the strike continued and the studios remained silent, pressure mounted. Despite the tensions between the two unions, thousands of IATSE members refused to cross the picket lines. On Black Friday, the strikers decided to concentrate their efforts at the Warner Brothers Studios gate. 300 picketers gathered to hold the line. Scabs, hired by Warner Brothers, tried to drive through the workers' picket lines to the studio. Variety accounted what happened next, writing, quote, "Strikers deployed from their barricades, halted non-strikers, and rolled three automobiles on their sides." By noon, reinforcements arrived from both sides. Firemen were called in to turn their hoses on the striking workers. Warner Brothers security deployed tear gas. Common for the time, accusations were hurled that the Conference of Studio Union Strikers were communists. As a result of the strike, the Conference of Studio Union's employees were assigned to other jobs in the studios. When they refused, they were locked out. The union never recovered. The violence at the Warner Brothers Studios gate also helped to fuel the passage of the Taft-Hartley Act through Congress, which eroded union protections. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out to Coup podcast. And did. This just in, while we went to break, Joe Manchin, stand-up guy, Democrat from West Virginia, has voted to move ahead with the confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court. Yep, that's right. And Lisa Murkowski from Alaska, the Republican we were just talking about, she actually voted no. So you can see what just happened here. Susan Collin comes out, kind of provides a little cover to make sure that Murkowski can say no. But they've already talked to Manchin, and they know that Manchin's going to vote yes to make sure that they're going to get Kavanaugh's confirmation, and they no longer need Flake. There you go. There it is. There it is. Unfreaking real, Sean.
Yep.
I mean, it just, we're just saying this is what's going to happen. But I just can't get past it. I cannot get past it. This is what these freaking people are doing. Right. Yeah. And I'm going to hold my other thoughts on that from there. Just I'm gonna get myself in trouble. But things at least, were interesting in Pennsylvania this past week. You know, Jeopardy came and went, and, ratings were up, but the show was a flop, I guess. Dude, I didn't watch the whole thing. You watched it. Please.
I thought it was awesome.
I thought it was awesome.
I thought it was hilarious. Speaking to some people in Harrisburg, Tom Wolf escaped unscathed from that. simply because Trebek spoke for 44 minutes out of an hour-long debate.
It was, I watched part of it. I told you this, and I said, like, I just couldn't sit and watch the Trebek show. Like, even his intro was kind of like, you know, people normally do this other thing. I don't like that. I'm going to do something different. Well, he did something different. Right? He did something different.
I mean, he managed to, like, get, there was a joke, he managed to get Jake Corman and Mike Terzai to agree on something. But interesting to say the least. Funny, like, you know, he went on a 3-minute tangent defending the Catholic Church, and then he definitely showed that he knew more about Pennsylvania politics than Scott Wagner knew about Pennsylvania politics.
Yep,
which I thought was pretty interesting. That was different.
Well, I actually said the one exchange that I thought was really interesting was like when, and this is goes right to your point there, is that, you know, well, there's two places where this goes on, right? Where I'm going to show you that I actually watched more of this debate than I let on. But it's like where Wagner attempts to make the claim that Corbett was actually like the education governor and he did more than for education than any other governor of the state. When Corbett like cut education by over $1 billion, right?
And Corbett was supposedly in the room with that too when that happened.
Really?
Yes, I think Corbett was at the dinner.
Oh my god!
Yeah, but yeah.
And Trebek even knew, like, but wait, he cut, you know, come back, and then the other stuff in with the gas tax.
Which, right? I mean, I have no problem with someone fact checking during a debate, a moderator fact checking someone.
No,
when you're making outrageous claims.
No, but my point being, like, you know, like Alex Trebek's, like, you know, performance was kind of like off the rails. Like, not off the rails, but it was just kind of like a weird combination of like the Alex Trebek show and like, oh yes, and I've got this debate I've got to do over here too as well. But he clearly at least like knew, like, there was, and look, Trebek is a Republican, right? And donates to Republican causes, right? So this is a guy who he even comes here and knows that like Wagner's full of shit on what's coming out of his mouth. Like, just like when he was challenging him on their Marcellus, the shale gas tax. Like, basically,
and
saying,
then the chamber,
you're telling me that's
going to
bring in no money? Really?
and then like the people in the room started groaning at him over that.
Yeah.
Like the capitalists, you know, like, like the people who, you know, are against taxing the shale got really pissed off at him.
Yep.
But yeah, this was definitely a failure on the chamber's end of things, bringing like So Philly Clout ran a couple like good stories today about like what happened, mm-hmm. and they're like, oh, we were just tossing names around there, and you know, it you know, we settled on Trebek, and it seemed hokey, and they're like, it was hokey, and we also got preachy.
Somebody said, wouldn't it be funny if?
but Gene Barr said, I think it started out fine. I think as he tried to dig deeper on issues, some of his questionings turned to advocacy, which is just, you know, fact-checking Scott Wagner.
Exactly.
For his bullshit. One of the things I did thought was really good, at the end of the debate, Scott Wagner went on his rant, and he said he wants to make government run as efficient as the dinner did. You know, he thanked the workers for handing out 1,700 meals during that event at the Hershey Lodge. And all those workers are part of a union.
There you go.
So Wagner was inadvertently thanking union workers for making things run on schedule.
See there?
I'm smart enough to, you know, form my own opinions.
See that? Oh, my God. Oh, my God. That is crazy. So, I don't know. So, I mean, you know, as far – has there been any new polling since we talked last week?
About Wagner?
Yeah, Wagner and Wolf.
No.
No. Well, I think it's – yeah. Well, Wagner – I mean, I don't know. Wagner is – he's a show unto himself and stuff like that. So, I mean, this week he did everything on his campaign. I mean, one, you get the Trebek show, and Wagner kind of just like – just saying things that aren't true during a debate, just trying to goad Tom Wolf and try to get him to stumble so that he can use that to spin it for PR ads. That's all. But then his campaign, as usual, right, was just freaking like, you know, a train wreck all week long.
Yeah. So one thing Wagner announced yesterday that he'll be bringing in Judge Jeanine Pirro. If you look at the campaign finance reports, he paid Pirro close to $25,000 for a fundraiser coming up. And, you know, Pirro was on Fox News the past couple of weeks spreading conspiracy theories about Dr. Blasé Ford and outright called her a fraud and her whole entire story a fraud yesterday morning on Fox News on The Five.
There you go. The company that you keep. The company that you keep.
Which goes smoothly into last the segment we were talking about.
Well, I just want to tell this. So this is one thing I say. To, you know, I say to my kids all the time, right? I tell them the story. This is a true story. When I was a kid, there was this kid lived in my neighborhood who was kind of a bully, right? Just kind of a mean kid or whatever. But every once in a while, like bullies and mean kids do, right? Every once in a while, they get nice to like particular individuals, and then they turn on you. That's how it works. So anyways, this one kid, he was being kind of nice to me, whatever, that week for whatever, and probably bored, didn't have anybody to play with, and whatever, he wanted to go ride bikes. And so we were riding bikes, we went down to the bottom of my street in a, that I grew up on. There's a dead end there. And in that dead end, there used to be a lot where this one guy used to store his trucks, right? He was a contractor, ran a contracting business, and he parked his trucks in there. He owned that little piece of that little lot at the end of the dead end. And so, you know, dump trucks down there and had like backhoes and things like this. So we were down in there and we were just kind of like messing around, kind of like climbing around and climbing on the trucks and things like this. Right. And, you know, again, we shouldn't have been doing that or whatever. But then we start climbing up and then we get onto the top and we decide to climb on the top of the truck. Right. Top of the dump truck where there's all the, you know, you got all those like yellow lights and kind of things like that. And this kid, I won't name him here, but he's got a rock in his hand and he starts smashing the lights. Right. And he wants me to smash the lights. Right. As well. And I don't smash the lights. Right. So I pick a rock. Say, oh, that'd be funny. But I'm like, you know, my head, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? Whatever. And so we're sitting there for a long time. And then we go home later on. And then my mom gets a phone call. Because sure enough, right at the end of it, there's a lot there. But there's a whole bunch of houses around there are watching these kids sitting up on top of the truck smashing the headlights or smashing the lights on the truck. Right. And so I get back on and I said, well, Mama, I didn't do it. And she's like, did you tell anybody about it? Right. Did you stop it? Did you stop playing with him? Did you come home? And I was like, no. I said, well, guess what? You know, you were there. You were associating with that and you didn't do anything to stop it. Right. So you are going to have to pay for and part of that. You have to work off the your share of that. And I thought it was the most unfair thing in the world. Right. But it was that whole idea about, you know, your connections matter. Who you associate with matters. Right. And you have to be held accountable for those things. And I tell my kids the same thing. So when I saw this, like Jeanine Pirro kind of coming in and this is who Wagner's going to hang out with. There you go, man. You just freaking tied yourself to this woman and these kind of nut job like allegations or conspiracy like whatever. And it's, you know, it's the company you keep, right? You got to be accountable for the company you keep. I don't know what to say.
Yeah. And supposedly, you know, Trump's coming back to Pennsylvania next week. He is going to be stumping for Mike Kelly up in Erie, Pennsylvania, Congressman Kelly. And it looks like Wagner is not going to be invited to this event. So one of the things that happened, Lou Barletta will probably be there. Lou Barletta is one of the first people to speak out in support of Donald Trump in Pennsylvania, right. Like the second or third person to do so ever in the campaign. So, you know, Wagner and Barletta are pretty tight. Barletta will probably be getting a job within the administration afterwards, probably at Department of Homeland Security or ICE.
That'd be my guess. Yeah.
I just totally made that up, but yeah.
No, like, I totally see it. I was thinking something along these lines last after we talked last week in the podcast. I was like, yeah, I could see Barletta. Like Barletta, this is like just like, you know, job interview for him. That's about it.
Yeah. So Barletta and Trump will be appearing again. I don't think Wagner will be there. But yeah, I mean, it just shows you the fucking wackos that Wagner has associated his campaign with. And it's like, this is exactly the company you keep. Speaking about Wagner.
Yeah. So, Wagner has a fine feathered friend this week, I guess.
Wagner actually had a couple of crazy things this week. Oh, so what he's been doing is like, I'm holding a town hall where he sits in front of like his Facebook Live videos, like these really weird Facebook Live. They're just gold.
Yeah, they really are.
And like he like was in a gun store. And it's like, I'm having a town hall with four people and the cat. He's like, and then so like yesterday he was at the farm show complex. Like I invited Tom Wolf to this, you know, town hall with an empty like studio chair right there, and he's with like four cows, four teenage girls, and he's not asking the girls for questions, but he's actually like asking the cows for questions. He's a blind surprise.
Is this like a Clint Eastwood moment? Talking to the empty chair.
Yes. No, this is not like a Clint Eastwood. He's been having multiple Clint Eastwood moments on his Facebook page over the past couple weeks. And then he went up to a farm, I guess, like out in like Berks County or something like that, Lebanon County, a duck farm or goose farm. I don't know, but he took a picture with it. And he's holding this goose and looking at it, this duck. And he's in like this like blue like track jacket, like overalls to go inside like the pen area. And like this duck just takes a huge shit on his side and he posts it up online.
Yeah, and that's the crazy thing. Like, first of all, like he's looking there. He's like in a tracksuit, right? He looks like he's freaking like, you know, like he's like in
straight out of like it's like James Gandolfini goes to a farm for the day.
Exactly.
I'm in a waste management business. Everybody immediately assumes you're mobbed up. It's a stereotype and it's offensive.
Well, they don't wear a freaking track jacket, right? Well, then did you hear but the fact that I didn't realize this, you told me this morning, I nearly fell over laughing, that I didn't realize it was actually his campaign that posted the picture.
Yes.
Well, did you hear the audio that got posted later on about him talking to his campaign staff?
I did not.
Well, it
das war ein Befehl! Der Angriff Steiners war ein Befehl! Wer schickt sie?
Yeah, he's pretty mad.
But this is like clearly turning into a vanity campaign at this point for Wagner.
Yeah.
Like, and did you hear what he did last week? We didn't put this in the notes, but he opened up a campaign office in Philly.
Oh, we did. We talked about this a little bit last week. Yeah.
Democrats for Wagner?
Yeah. Yeah.
And well, I don't know if we talked about this, but he opened it up on like 5th and Lombard off of South Street.
Uh-huh.
Which, like, are you familiar with South Street at all in Philadelphia?
A bit, yeah.
It's sort of like the trendy hipster area back in the 80s and 90s, like, that's where, like, the hardcore grungy punk scene was at. And if someone like Scott Wagner opened up an office down there, there'd be a brick through every single fucking window of that office.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just like the craziest campaign's just been, it's just going off the – I mean, it's off the rails at this point. It's not even going off the rails. It's like, all right, here comes that cliff.
Yep.
don't miss it.
Oh, my God.
It's like Thelma and Louise. Just.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Crazy.
So.
Go play with your spidget finner.
That's what he's got to do.
The thing is, like, we're still like 30 some days out from the election, and it's just I don't see it getting crazier, but it will be getting crazier with Wagner.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's going to be the tactic at this point. Right. I mean,
it just go as crazy as possible.
Yeah. I mean, that's what you got to do. Right. The only way forward for him is actually to double down on craziness and outlandish claims and, you know, the whole kind of Trumpian logic.
Did you see the billboards he was putting up in around Pennsylvania?
Yeah, I've seen a couple of them.
Socialist flagger?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, that's just fucking nuts.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're going to see more of that. I think we're just going to see more of just the kind of, like, you know, like, burn shit to the ground.
Yeah.
You know,
Which, good on him, because it'll be great for everyone else.
Well, I think so. I mean, the more he does that stuff, I mean, making himself, in a sense, more and more irrelevant when it comes to that, you know, the actual race. Yes, it's going to fan the flames of some stuff. But meanwhile, I actually think it's actually going to kind of, like, you know, have effects, like, deep effects down ballot.
Yeah, because, right? Like, well, the thing is, you look at the latest, like, Franklin Marshall poll, no one knows who Scott Wagner is and no one knows who Lou Barlett is. Or care, like, especially Republicans don't really care to vote for either one of them.
There you go.
Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent. It's about freaking time.
And speaking about down ballots.
Yeah.
House Speaker Mike Terzai, his opponent, Emily Skopoff, who we talked to at the Progressive Summit, is within 5 points in internal poll shows. Now, like, obviously we're saying internal polls and you got to be skeptical of them, but this internal poll, this, the company that did this, has a B rating with 538 and has a non-bias rating from them too. So that's a pretty accurate poll coming out from the Skopoff campaign. And they wouldn't release that unless they're within a few points, single digits, which, again, this has people worried. In Harrisburg, like, you know, we put out a reporting from last week about Pat Brown losing significantly to Mark Pinsley, who is a Bernie-crat, pretty much endorsed by Our Revolution, flippable, a lot of major unions. Pinsley is in a district, Pat Brown's district, in 2016 went for 4 points for Clinton. It went for 5 for Wolf when he was up for re-election, and went for 10 for Casey at that point.
That's big.
Now Wolf is winning this district where Pat Brown's at by like 25 points.
That's big. Yeah, yeah.
And like Charlie Dent's not on the ticket anymore, and Pat Brown's not known for someone who goes out and campaigns and goes to Eagle Scout events like Charlie Dent was.
Right.
And Marty Nothstein has been written off by the Republican Party, National Party. So it looks like and Susan Wild's winning that district by, you know, 12 points at this point.
Man.
So happy trails, Pat.
Happy trails.
Again, and this is also something that like a bunch of Harrisburg insiders claiming that this won't happen, but I am predicting that it will. And it's going to be interesting. You know, like an upset like that has not happened since 2010, 2006.
Well, you know, and that what's going to be kind of amazing is to see, like, these folks, if they both win, right? Susan Wild looks like she's going to win, right? And if so they both win, right, and then moves forward, they're going to be going in, like, you know, those future elections with incumbency, right, which is that much more kind of important to be able to carry that campaign forward. And they could start thinking about, like, expanding expanding the numbers of people getting elected and right. And lending support to other campaigns. And this is going to be, that could be potentially huge.
Yeah. And the one thing, Lehigh County has always been a traditionally like blue county, mm-hmm. For the past few decades, pretty much. Cause Allentown is in it. Brown's district consists of the whole entire city. Yep. So the city accounts for a third of his district.
Yep.
Which is pretty significant.
Yeah.
So that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, especially since you're going to basically, you know, lower the IQ of the rest of the Republican Party in the state if he loses. let's check the competence meter. Uh-oh.
Literally, like, so like I heard, like, if he loses, there are two people who are like who will be able to carry this committee, the appropriations committee, and it would be Mike Fulmer,
mm-hmm.
who was a used tire salesman who beat Brightbill back in 2006 in a primary. He took out the Senate Majority Leader at that point.
Oh man, wait, will it be
Darryl?
No, it will not be Darryl Metcalf. And the other one's Gordner. Gordner is competent. Fulmer's a little goofy. But Fulmer is actually pretty interesting because Fulmer is like an inside ear to the Wolf administration. Mm-hmm. So if like the Wolf administration needs something done within the Republican caucus, they go to Fulmer for help. And Fulmer tries to like whip some votes up and try to get the support for the administrative issues within that. So it's actually pretty weird how like that stuff works out when people think of Fulmer and stuff like that.
Hmm. There we have it. Pretty cool. Pretty cool.
Yeah,
I mean it's exciting. I mean, if you look at the state level, if you look at what's happening in the state, I mean, this is a real exciting election. I mean, this is you know, the organizing that has been going on, the kind of, you know, the fact that people are paying so much attention to much more like to localized races is incredible to me. And you can feel the energy, like when you kind of can turn away from, you know, the bright light that is national politics right now. And, you know, when the sunspots start to kind of like fade from your vision and you start looking at kind of what's happening here in Pennsylvania. I mean, it's amazing.
So another thing I heard this week, Marguerite Quinn, who's running for McElhinney's seat in your neck of the woods.
Yep.
She got HB 2060 through. Which is like the domestic violence bill, taking guns away from domestic abusers.
Yep.
And people have PFAs against them. That got passed this week, went on to the governor's desk. It's going to come signed into law. She is running against Santa Ciro, and the Republicans have pretty much discounted her from winning.
Really?
Yes. That's what I've been hearing out here in Harrisburg. Whoa. So Santa, I think like they gave up on that seat a while ago. From what insiders are saying. So looks like you're going to have Schaefer or Lindsey Williams winning. You're going to have Pat Brown losing. You're going to have Pinsley winning. And it looks like you're going to have Santa Ciro winning. So far, so like you look at it right now, if those three win, you take literally, you know, it straightens out that majority a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's you're not going to take the majority back in the Senate, but you're going to even out a lot of committees, and they're not going to be lopsided.
Right, right.
So,
wow, impressive, man. You know, and as huge as the kind of like the left progressive wins were, you know, with like, you know, Sarah Enamorado, Summer Lee, you know, Linda Feeler, as big as those were, the fact that we're seeing progressives, right, and even just Democrats for that matter, taking Republican seats, that is even bigger, right? Because it just, you know, like you said, I mean, it kind of, it's yet another buffer.
Yeah, and Santa Ciro is not progressive by any stretch of the imagination, but...
No, but he's a Democrat, right? And he's taking a red seat, which is going to decrease that majority, which is key.
Yeah, and when I was putting together my story, one of the staffers, campaign people, we were going back and forth. They were saying that Pennsylvania can turn out to be like Virginia last year. That's what they're expecting on the ground. People in Harrisburg have really tampered expectations of the House and Senate races, but organizers on the ground for these campaigns are expecting pickups like the 2017 pickups in Virginia.
Mm-hmm. That's incredible.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Well, we shall see, man. It's getting closer. I'm getting excited. So what else we got?
In
the state. Anything else fun?
Anything? Tom Mert, a vulnerable Republican in the Horsham, Willow Grove area. He gave a killer cop a patronage job at the Philadelphia Parking Authority. And this actually has more local implications. Scott Petrie, who was from Southampton area, his seat went from Republican to blue with Helen Tye winning. Petrie left the House to go to the Philadelphia Parking Authority, claiming he would not be giving out any more patronage jobs. Well, he gave out a patronage job to a police officer who was charged with murder when he shot and killed a suspect who was in the back and was running away. At the time of the incident, no one wanted to arrest the person. It took over a year to do this, and activism and Larry Krasner finally charged the person with murder.
There we have it. Oh, boy. All right. Well, I got one thing to close us out, and this is a hard one. This was, as you know, we've been following the Colleen Bradley whistleblower case here since January, really closely. I mean, I first reported on Colleen Bradley's case back in, what was it, 2014, 2015, when she was the, director of administration and finance down at Westchester University. And she basically blew the whistle on basically what the university was doing with its accounting scheme, which is basically committing fraud. And this is something that stood out for me right from the get-go because I'd been writing and doing research on exactly this kind of stuff. So anyways, she had come forward and blew the whistle and was fired for it. And her case has kind of been making its way through the court system. And the long story short of it, right, just to kind of make sure everybody's up to speed on it, was that she was alleging that the university was basically plugging numbers into the books to make it look like they had deficits when really they were sitting on quite significant surpluses, right? And so they were able to use austerity when it came to cutting faculty, raising tuition, and all this other kind of stuff. Well, meanwhile, spending the money where they wanted to spend it for building buildings and so on. And this wasn't just Westchester University. It was Kutztown University, Shippensburg University, East Stroudsburg University. They were doing this across the state. And it was with the knowledge and direction of the chancellor's office in Pashi. Right. So that was the deal. But as it made its way through the court system, there were two snags. Right. One had to do with, constitutional clauses about the you can't sue the state. Right. And some of that, that's kind of one aspect of it. And the other aspect of it was whether or not Colleen Bradley was entitled to First Amendment whistleblower protections or First Amendment protections for blowing the whistle. Why? Because of a bunch of court rulings over the years, which, again, you will go read my stuff if you want to know about what it's all about. Because some court rulings over the years, it's been found that there, under certain circumstances, if you are kind of operating within your existing job description, right? If you are operating, you're doing what you're told and you're going that and you're fired for doing what you're told, you are entitled to no protections. So in other words, if I'm an auditor, right, and I'm told to audit these books, and I come back with an audit that shows that there's corruption, right? And then I get fired for that, right? I have no protection, right? Because I did what I was told, and I'm being fired for it because I gave them an answer that they don't want. And Pennsylvania, it's an at-will employment state, so they don't have just cause and just get rid of you. In the other case where you say you come forward, you go to the newspapers, right? If I would say, instead of going to my boss and here's the report, I go to the newspapers and I blow the whistle, then I do have First Amendment protections. What Colleen Bradley's case was about was what happens in between those two spaces. What happens if you're aware of something that is going on in part because of your job, which is, you know, what whistleblowers come across to, but instead of going directly to the newspapers, which could potentially put you in all sorts of other problems, violations of confidentiality or kind of insubordination, whatever it might be, instead of doing that, say that you just went out of your normal job duties, right, what you're supposed to do, and you went to another group at, in this case, the university, or another group at work, but in this case, another group at the university that included people that she normally did not report to, but that she believed would help rectify the fraud because her bosses were basically just committing fraud, signing her name to it, and all this other kind of stuff, that she was attempting to make people known, to blow the whistle upon that so that it could be acted on and fixed. And then she was fired, right? What the circuit court, the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, right, and after the District Court of Pennsylvania, what had come out of the Third Circuit Court of Appeals is basically that saying that, nope, she was not acting, or she was acting within her job description, even though there's sworn depositions from her boss saying that she was not doing that, right? So they said, nope, sorry, we can't. You're not entitled to this protection because you're operating your job description, and they substituted the sworn testimony from her boss, who basically said no, she was not doing that, and who actually she was suing the boss, right? So he had an incentive, right, to say something that was going to help himself out, but this is like, no, she was doing it outside of her job description. This was not something that we asked her to do. We explicitly told her not to, All right, that she was not supposed to do that, and she gets fired for it. The Supreme, the District Court of Appeals basically substitutes their own definition for that, their own reading, their own opinion based on nothing, right? And says that and denies her whistleblower rights. So this summer, basically what had happened, and we've reported and we've talked about this before, she filed with her lawyers a writ of certiorari, I never say that word right, to the Supreme Court, which is basically saying, okay, look, it's not part of the normal appeals process because they basically they dinged her case on a technicality as opposed to on the merits of the case. So they dinged her on this technicality. So you can't appeal it to the Supreme Court. You have to write this special thing and ask the court to hear your case because you believe that the judges erred in the way that they were kind of reading the case and some of the provisions. And we just found out on Monday of this week that the Supreme Court has denied that. Now, what that means effectively are two things, right? This is not the end, right, of this all stuff, but now it's going to take a very different form. But it means two things. Number one, because the Supreme Court has let the Third Circuit decision stand, your rights, if you're a public employee in the state of Pennsylvania or anywhere within the kind of Eastern District coverage, right, you just lost additional First Amendment protections of work. Right. That means that your ability to blow the whistle on wrongdoing, on fraud and corruption at your workplace just got narrowed. Right. And I have to say, well, I'll leave that off in a second. The second thing is that the actual fraud at the center of the case has never been litigated. Because it's never come up. And nobody has contested the facts of the case. They've only argued this on technicalities. And so now, once that Supreme Court rules this, you see what Pashi comes out and does is they basically use that as an opportunity to basically call her a liar and said, see, she was without merit. Her claims were wrong. When they know, as well as I know, as well as Colleen Bradley knows, that that was not what the court said. So now, like as Colleen Bradley said, right, what she said, right, in she was interviewed in Delco Times, right, the Daily Times down there. And one of the things that she said is that, okay, what, you know, what's the effect of this? Is the effect of this? Oh, hold on. Sorry. She said the effect basically of this is to kind of, you know, give license to further corruption. That's what it comes down to. That she will be asked, or she said, look, and I'm, this is the quote, and this is the kind of person she is. Like, she says, quote, the outcome of this decision is very unfortunate because it opens the doors to further corruption, she said. The Supreme Court's decision also does not mean the fraudulent accounting practice were not taking place. She says, I have no regrets, and I sympathize with victims who are experiencing similar circumstances and don't have any hope for protection or justice. That woman, I'm telling you, she's been, she has given me hope about what it looks like to actually fight the good fight and do it for the right reasons. She's an amazing person. And to see her treated the way that she's been treated has been gut-wrenching to me. So there you go. The narrowing of your First Amendment rights at work and public thing. And, you know, we should also say this is not now in conflict with a ruling that came from, I think, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals out in California, who kind of took this another way. So now we have conflicting law in the country. So depending upon where you live in the country, your rights are now different. If you live in the Ninth Circuit, well, guess what? You have First Amendment protections at work for this kind of situation. If you live here in Pennsylvania, or if you live in this kind of district, nope, sorry, you don't. Right? Shut up is what the message is. Suck it up, shut up, keep it to yourselves, or you're going to lose your job. And you'll have no justice. That's where we're on now. The fact that the fraud will continue drives me crazy. And I have to tell you, this is my own frustration. And this, I know this is Colleen's frustration. And I know this has been the frustration of some faculty. Jerry Carbo, kudos to Jerry Carbo out in Shippensburg University, who got a group of faculty members together to sign on to an amicus brief that was filed, a friend of the court brief that was filed along with Colleen Bradley's case. At least some faculty step forward. But the fact that my own faculty union would not step up and kind of get behind this case, the fact that it seemed like, you know, the Pennsylvania ACLU not so interested in this case, right? The fact that there was other whistleblower, national whistleblower protection case, were not so interested in this case, right, has really blown my mind, right? And they all use the same, go, well, if it gets taken up by the Supreme Court, then maybe we'll get ready to do this. No, we don't want to support, we don't want to kind of spend our resources and our time to make sure that these First Amendment protections are upheld. No, 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 we're going to wait, right? And I get people have kind of different, you know, levels of commitment and only limited amounts of resources. I get that. But when it came to my own union, right, that became really frustrating for me personally, right, in part because what the very mechanism that the state system of higher education has been using, right, to fire faculty members, to get us to kind of like, you know, suck it up and work more for less, to raise tuition on students, right, and to justify the way that they are lying to us on a daily basis, right, why I have to live in a freaking building with black mold and watch my fellow faculty members getting moved out of the building because they're having asthma attacks and health attacks. While that's going on, like, this is they get the lie, and they're going to use this Supreme Court case of the denial of it as a way of covering their own asses, and no one has been held accountable. Why is it that we're not seeing kind of like, you know, the Attorney General looking into this and prosecuting this stuff? I have no idea. What I was told, and I don't know the degree of the basis, but I have thing is that does not want to weigh, Attorney General doesn't want to weigh in on this because it's potentially toxic politically and he's got political aspirations. All right? We'll see. You know, and you know, again, these are all people that in so many other circumstances I'm 100% behind. I'm union to my core. Right? I'm a proud member of ABSCUF, right? But my union, my leadership, my union taking this move on the Colleen Bradley case has been crazy. The fact that the Attorney General has not wanted to take this up drives me insane. The fact that the PA ACLU is not wanting to take up this case has driven me insane. So it's a bad day. It's a dark day for defense of workers' rights, the defense of whistleblower rights, and the attempt to make sure that citizens are not getting ripped off by greedy administrators and managers that are out there. It's a sad day for us when we find this out. But like I said, this is not the end. So that's just a little preview of my slightly simmering rage as we go forward. So anyways, that's what I got to say, Sean. Thank you for putting up with me once again. I hope Twitter was okay for you.
It is.
Yeah, good, good, good. I'm glad to hear it. So anyways, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. When we come back, we're going to get into today's last call, which I'm very, very excited about. We're going to talk a little bit of space news. We're going to talk about bioweapon insects and a little stuff happening here at Free Will. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We'll be right back after this. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull no punches, progressive reporting, and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Welcome back, everybody. It's Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. Let's call. Yes, here we go. We talk space news. We talk anything that's fun that we want to talk about. We talk beer. And I got a couple items right up top here it's sheer just joy in my kind of dystopic worldview. DARPA, You know who DARPA is?
No, I don't.
DARPA is the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. All right. DARPA are some of the folks who basically designed the internet initially. Right. So it came out of the kind of military projects and kind of doing this advanced science and things like this. Okay. So DARPA has got this new program that they're working on, this new research they're doing on. And it's called, I swear, I kid you not, it's called Insect Allies. All right. I want to read a little bit about what this is. So a new DARPA program is poised to provide an alternative to traditional agricultural threat response using targeted gene therapy to protect mature plants within a single growing season. DARPA proposes to leverage a natural and very efficient two-step delivery system, I love the way they talk about this, to transfer modified genes to plants, insect vectors, and plant viruses they transmit. In the process, DARPA aims to transform certain insect pests into dun-dun-dun insect allies. And that's the name of the new effort. So here's the deal. They want to take aphids. You know what aphids are, right?
No, what's that?
An aphid is like a this little tiny green bug, right, that you see. They're pests. They get on all sorts of outdoor plants, garden plants. They get on like milkweed. They love milkweed. They'll go and eat that shit like crazy. So what they want to do is they say, well, look, what happens? The aphids already become a way of transferring viruses from one plant to another. So say a plant has got a virus and it's getting sick. These aphids go up and they eat on that plant. And they go to the next plant and they transfer that virus, right? What DARPA is trying to do is say, hey, you know what? Usually, if we want to kind of create a genetically modified plant, right, like say, for example, a new rice plant or a new corn plant or something like this, we have to usually go through kind of 6 or 7 generations of that plant before it will actually kind of like be fully genetically modified, right? So their thing is like, hey, what if we could like inject, right, a modified gene into a plant, right, and have that gene run rampant through the rest of the genome of the plant and change the plant in one growing season, right? So you're infecting the plant with this virus, right, that's got this virus that's kind of hollowed out, and you've got this genetic code that's stuffed in it instead that's going to be delivered directly to the plant's genome, right? And so they want to basically take these aphids. They're already doing experiments on this, right? Take the aphids, right, and modify this virus, release the aphids to go suck up this modified virus and go to other plants. And they basically want to now then release them into the world, right? I kid you not. I kid you not. And so, you know, some people started looking at this and started saying, well, wait, whoa, wait a minute. So you're saying that you want to do this to make sure that you can keep plants from being like, you know, from being susceptible to drought and kind of like particular kinds of diseases. But like, what's to stop you from like switching out the genetic stuff that's in there and turn this into a biological weapon? Right. And DARPA's kind of like, we wouldn't do that. That's silly. Right. So now it's actually this whole thing, this research. I just couldn't believe this. I came across this. I think, oh my God, this is exactly the kind of crap that like I fear most, right? You know, the idea that it's not going to be like big nuclear war. It's not going to be big society collapse. It's going to be these kind of experiments going completely awry because some freaking genius, right, decides that they want to try something out. And then we have these bugs that are going to be going around and like infecting plants and shit with stuff. Oh my God, it's nuts. It's nuts.
So I just saw something on Twitter.
Oh God, do tell.
Did you catch this last night? News what? With Donald Trump?
From that speech he gave?
No.
From the tax issues, which we didn't talk about at all today? No, then I guess not. What?
He was carrying a flag with him onto Air Force One.
I did not see that.
Did he
have it upside down? Please say he had it upside down.
No, it's even better. He had a piece of toilet paper stuck to his shoe.
Was it red, white, and blue? I gotta ask.
So, like, he's walking up the steps to Air Force One. And you see this thing, like, flapping around as he's going up. I had to, like, I was like, this can't be real. Like, and I'm just looking at it, like, oh my God. And this wasn't like a small square. It was like at least like 2 or 3 squares just like stuck.
Sean, I can't shit on those planes. I always have to have a good shit before I get on the plane. So I had to sit down there and I had to get myself in a nice mood, right, to empty myself out before I got on that plane because I wanted an extra weight. So it must have just got stuck there and I must have just not been wiping as well.
So what I thought was hilarious, it's like someone tweets like, I wonder how many people saw that and bothered not to tell him.
Yeah, and just like, Mr. And you never let him go. Just let him go. Oh my God, that's great.
Yes.
Oh man. Well, here's another little
It's a good like
oh my God, I needed that.
It's a good metaphor for him just shitting all over America.
Yeah, exactly. And not even being good enough to clean himself well. Leave a little trash around trailing from his shoes. That's great. Well, you know, the other thing, we talked about this a little bit last week, and I talked about this really cool, these mascot rovers. They were the two little kind of like shoebox size landers and rovers, or they were literally called hoppers. That was the first time in human history that someone successfully landed a probe onto an asteroid. It was a Japanese endeavor, and they were called mascots. It stood for something that I'm not going to kind of go into all that, but the rovers are no more, right? But that's what was by design. So it was, they actually lasted a little bit longer than they expected them to. They had a battery, which they thought was going to be about, 12 or 14 hours. And it went up to, I think like 16 hours or stuff. And not only did they successfully like hop around on this asteroid and kind of take some really cool pictures, about what this freaking asteroid looks like straight up, they were able to successfully send their data back to the kind of little mothership that was there. Cause they basically had this satellite that went up that kind of matched speed with the asteroid, dropped these two little shoebox things, and then they beamed it back up to this little satellite thing, which is shipping the data back to Earth. So that was just a really freaking kind of amazing stuff. So some cool pictures this week. What the science is saying on it, what's interesting about it is that, the like planets like Earth and obviously like, you know, the rest of our solar system and across the universe is that the planets were, you know, they looked one thing at one point, then they formed and they've changed kind of dramatically over kind of like millions and millions of years. You know, impacted, you know, they've cooled, they've reshaped, they've been impacted by, you know, comets and asteroids and meteors and all that kind of stuff. And there's been collisions, but asteroids, scientists think at least, right, are kind of pretty close to the way that they were then, right, when they first formed. So just in terms of the way of like the processes by which, say, objects formed out of the gases, right, you know, kind of after the Big Bang and all this kind of stuff, they're hoping to get some interesting data coming from that. So just some cool stuff. Sean, I forgot to put this in the show notes. But I have to tell you, I purposely stayed up a little later last night, and I watched the first episode of Ozark.
Nice. How'd you like it?
It's good. It looks good so far.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, I was almost gonna interject like somewhere in there, but I decided not to do it. Right. I was gonna be like, so what does my father decide? Do you remember that piece? It was five. It was what was it? 5 pesos. Right. What does my father decide? And so the first episode. And so now they're down in the Ozarks and we're getting ready to go to the rest. I just want to let you know, see, like, unlike you, right, when you make a suggestion to me, I actually say, hey, well, let me go check it out because, you know, I think Sean might have something to say about this. Just saying. So. Couple cool releases this week. Free Will Brewing, I wish I could have been there last night. They just released All VIP. It's a New England style IPA. Looks really good. But the coolest part is they released it as part of a film, like a viewing, like what am I saying? A film watch party, basically, whatever it is. That's a very bad way of saying what I'm supposed to be saying.
A viewing?
What's that? A viewing, something like that, right? So they showed this film called Poured in PA, which is a documentary about Pennsylvania craft beer. It was really cool. And then they released this New England style IPA, kind of a can release last night, as part of that too as well. So maybe I'll pick some of that stuff off later today. I hope to be able to get to see that that documentary too as well. We can tell you a little bit about it once we check it out tomorrow. Free Will will release a Paw Paw Saison, which I was like, man, that's really cool. Pawpaw. And I always hear about these things, you know, these fruits of the pawpaw. And in the Free Will description of the Saison, right, they say this. And I was like, I didn't realize this, but the pawpaw is like the only fruit that's indigenous to PA. And it's like these big green things. And apparently they're like, they've got like a custard like constituency or consistency on the inside. I've never had one. But if anybody out there has had one or is kind of a big kind of like, you know, paw kind of like fan who knows about stuff, like, let us know. Drop us a line at through our either our tip line or through ragingchickenpress@gmail.com. I'd love to hear more about it. And I'm going to kind of check that out. So I'm looking forward to checking out the paw saison too as well. So yeah, that's it. So, Sean, anything else you kind of got going on? Plans for the weekend or anything?
Probably watch the Eagles lose.
Watch the Eagles lose? You're not so high on them this year?
Yeah. I think they've been a lot of close football, but yeah.
I overheard like several conversations this week about all the theories about why Carson Wentz isn't so great this year.
Well, I mean, he's just coming off an injury. He is playing really well.
Yeah. Well, there was a group of people that I heard that the theory was that it's now because he's married.
Oh, yeah.
That was a really interesting
300 yards, argument. 2 touchdowns. Yeah. 4 touchdowns and 1 interception in the past couple of games. That's a pretty good ratio.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I was looking at these people. It's like, really? You're going to blame it on his wife as Kavanaugh's hearing is going on? This is how you're going to make sense of the world right now. Okay,
yes.
That's right. Anyway, anything else for the good of the order, Sean?
Nope, I am good.
He is good. You hear everybody? Sean, he is good. And he's going to get better over the weekend. So, all right. Well, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Thanks for hanging out with us for a little today. And, you know, look forward to – oh, well, one thing last I should mention too as well. I had lost my recorder. Right, I shouldn't say lost it. I misplaced my recorder. So this last week, I met with Colleen Fitzgerald, and she and I sat down, and we did some kind of pre-record for the next episode of Free Range, but I could not find my recorder. I finally found it on Wednesday and got it home, and I just haven't pulled the audio from that yet. So look for something maybe next week if we can find a time where we both can get together and do another round of recording. So anyways, thanks a lot, everybody. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Good looking out. And, you know, what can I say? I think that maybe, I don't know. Hopefully things will get better next week. Get that much closer to the election. What else can I say? Kavanaugh's got something to say. See ya!
We drank beer. She had one beer at the party and had beers with. Out and having some beers with friends or just to meet up and have some beers. I mean, drinking beer, which I gladly do. I like
you
beer.
You haven't answered that.
I like beer. I don't know if you do.
Okay.
Do you like beer, Senator, or not? What do you like to drink?
Next one is...
Senator, what do you like to drink?